You are listening to The New Man, Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Why didn't guys like Jesus or the Buddha have a family? Is having a wife and kids a nail in the coffin of your personal development? Or is it possible that having a family gives us a greater opportunity to learn and grow? This week, we're jumping back into our discussion with Guy Sengstock. Listen in as he gives us some tips for bettering yourself as a man in the midst of a chaotic family life. Yeah, that's the common denominator I'm starting to pick up, is that whatever I'm doing that's avoiding being here in this moment is a form of that closing or contraction.
Absolutely.
Now, why would I want to hang out in this place? Because it's fucking miserable. Why would in that moment it might be really shitty? So why would I want to stay there?
That's a good question. Well, you know, human beings, if you look historically, are not known for being with what's so. We don't have a good history with embracing the moment or each other. And I think that, well, why we would want to do that is simply because that is reality. That is what's happening. The thing about it, though, the thing about what's happening is that the one thing that it will always do is that it will always change. It's changing on its own. If I'm angry, I'm not going to stay angry forever. It's going to pass. It's going to change into another feeling. If I'm joyful, it's going to change into another feeling. When I'm contracting around an emotion, What I'm doing is I'm not in the recognition or the realization that this too shall pass, that this too shall change. On some level, I'm afraid that it's going to stay around and that I got to do something about it, and I take control and I start pushing it away. Okay. But the problem with that is, as we all know, as we push and we start to suppress things, that thing actually grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
That's a deep piece of wisdom there, because I don't think a lot of people do get that. But what you're saying, that the thing that I want to change, the more that I try to change it, most of the, you know, kind of the principle is that it has it getting bigger and becoming more cumbersome.
Absolutely.
Okay. That sucks. So let's ride with that. So the thing that I want to change, and the more that I try to change it, that the fact that I can't be with this thing that's showing up right now, with whether it's my family getting in the way of my practice or whatever that may be, and I'm going to take control and change it, actually has it growing or becoming more of an adversary. Well, then what do I do?
What do I do with...
Ultimately, I want to be in acceptance or equanimity, I guess, with this scenario, not be in such a me versus it or me versus her, or me versus them scenario.
Mm-hmm. Right. The main thing of it is that as we embrace things, it settles down on its own. It allows... See, the thing about it is that, you know, they talk a lot about this in Buddhism. They also talk about this in yoga a lot as well, is that if you can fully go into and let go of your resistance to whatever's happening, that being itself has a natural dynamism to it. That if you let the unfolding unfold as it is, it will naturally accelerate, it'll naturally transform. But it's when we push against it or we clutch around it that it gets bound up and it starts to be suppressed and it becomes rigid. So it's actually the opposite. It's like opposite of our instincts or the way that we've been trained. Is, you know, the way we've been trained is if you don't want something bad to happen, avoid it or push it away. But what I'm really saying is, and I think that there's a lot of mysticism really says this, a lot of Buddhism really says this, a lot of the spiritual traditions really say this, is that if you want the pain to transform, go totally into it and allow the pain fully to be there, and it will transform. That takes a lot of discipline, and that takes a lot of practice, and I'm still doing it.
Right.
And fumble-fucking my way through the whole thing.
And that's a whole conversation into of itself, but the idea is there not to try to go around or avoid the X, Y, or Z, but to actually experience it and move through it. That's the
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, what about the guy... And I've known a couple of these guys. They're like on the masochistic side. They kind of glamorize or glorify the challenges that their family or their partner may provide them in their life, and say, "Well, this is my work that I need to do." And there's some truth in that. But somehow, I don't know. I don't buy it all the time. For some guys, maybe. For other guys, it seems like some kind of a collapse or bullshit. So is there such a thing as going too far the other way? Like, wow, I'm really in a pile of shit here, and I'm not recognizing that, and I'm trying to rationalize it as my spiritual work. Do you have any? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you know, you don't have to talk about me in the third person. I notice you keep talking about me in the third. You don't have to do that. You know, one of the interesting things about being in a teacher role and being a facilitator role and having family and wife and kids is that in a teacher role, and I think a lot of teachers will probably agree with this, is that one of the things that you do is you hold people's idealizations of you. So you kind of hold that, you know, a lot of times what people do is that they'll project their own good qualities that they don't own onto the teacher. And if the teacher does their job well enough, they're able to hold those projections until the student can take them back. And I'm kind of in a teacher role and facilitator role. And being in that role means, in a certain sense, holding a lot of projections for people so they can start to take it back. And the kinds of conversations that we have are talking about the ideal way something can be, talking about love and truth and all these different things in terms of possibilities. And I can't tell you how many times I've gotten in front of a room full of people and talked about intimacy and opening up with your partner and the possibility of love and everything like that, and then proceeded to go home and completely contract around my wife and start doing the exact thing that I just shared with everyone not to do an hour before that in my, you know, in the class I was teaching.
Well, I'm certainly guilty of that, too.
I always get a little nervous when my wife comes to the stuff that I'm teaching.
She's going to heckle you?
Because I think that the ultimate truing up of that kind of grandiosity that you're asking about is really where the rubber meets the road with that, and the truing up of that has really been with my wife. It's with my wife and with my kids, but that instant feedback of whether I'm open or closed in my family life, there is an instant feedback. If I walk into my house and I'm closed and I'm contracted and I'm distracted, that shows up in my wife is suffering. Same thing with my kids. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very instant. And for me, it's very difficult to hold those kinds of idealized images of myself and brag about it with other people when I get the reality with my wife and my kids. And the reality is that there are days that I'm really in a deep place and I'm able to be very present with them. And then there's days where I'm really off the mark and I'm, you know, I'll be an asshole to them or something like that, or I'll be distant. Mm. It's just doing this work in family life is what the thing I discover is that I'm very, 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 very human. I'm very human. And it really does dispel a lot of those kind of self-images and that grandiosation of things because of that feedback of my own humanity. Mm.
Yeah, and I'm imagining why a lot of spiritual teachers would not want to be householders. It's like if this is who I am and this is the identity I want to perpetuate, why do I want to come home to something that's going to remind me that I'm not doing it, quote unquote, well or really good? I'm really on top of the game. I don't want anything to challenge that.
Yeah.
So it's easy to go, as you say, up on the mountain and not have to deal with any of that direct feedback. But you walking this path and for many others walking this path and being in a family, we're constantly reminded of where things could be shifted a little bit. There's more opportunity.
Totally. I personally have just had a bigger picture sense of it. I've just realized the place that I was really off the mark, in that I had spent the last 5 years or so really building Arete and Authentic SF and all the different things, and really have a deep sense of purpose about that. And as it got bigger, as it started to demand more of me, I started to work more and more, and that started to have a real impact on my wife and my kids. And a lot of times when my wife would bring it up with me, or she'd start to suffer around me not being home so much, I would get, if not overtly defensive, I'd get inside, I would contract, or I would somehow deny what she was saying or justify it, and wouldn't really get the communication. And then I got to a point in my business where I was able to, it really became very successful, which is, I think a lot of people who are in this world for a living, it is quite a deal to live in your purpose and have it make you money. I mean, it really takes something, and it's taken a lot for me to do that. Mm-hmm. And I finally got to a place where it became successful. Mm-hmm. And I could relax, and I didn't have to work so many hours. And when I did, and I finally relaxed, and I settled down one day at home, and I looked around, and I realized, oh my God, I have really been gone. Mm-hmm. And that has actually taken a toll on me and my family. And I realized, I was having a moment with Forrest, my son. We were playing Candyland or something like that. And I stopped and I looked at him, and I had a moment where I really got him, where I really saw him. I felt him. I got Forrestness in that real heartfelt, deep way. And I realized that, oh my God, it is actually possible to miss that. Hmm. It is actually possible to miss that. And I realized that over the past couple of years, I have been missing some of it. And even my wife had been telling me that I had, and I couldn't hear it. And so that really has had me take a relook and adjustment in how I've been doing things, of realizing that, God, I have been really, really driven with this sense, this quote-unquote sense of purpose around contributing to the world. But I'm really left, that whole experience really left me with the deep question inside of myself is, okay, how valuable is my contribution to the world if I'm not totally there for my family at home? And so that just happened the last couple of months. And so there's been a new resolve in myself, or a commitment in myself, that I'm only going to, my purpose in the world, my contribution into the world, has to be in a way, done in such a way that I fully take care of my family and of myself. Yeah, and that's just been a very recent adjustment in an example of where I kind of really had the blinders on, and where my wife was telling me, my wife was even saying it to me, and I really wasn't getting it until I kind of got knocked in the head and really opened up and realized I was off track in a way that I wasn't even present to it.
That leads me to the next question, or right into the next question of, you know, we've got the masochistic guy that we talked about, but also the guy that kind of sandbags his personal development or his passion, or at even worse, like his purpose, the thing that he wants to do in the world, because I've got my family, I've got my responsibilities with my families. It becomes an excuse to not actually follow what we are most passionate about, or what our purpose is in the world. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit too. It seems like there's another extreme where we cut that off because it's going to jeopardize our family, or there's this myth that it will jeopardize our family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, this is, again, it's in those, that apparent polarity where I don't believe there actually is a polarity. I think it seems like there's a polarity, but I think in reality that there really isn't one, but we do make one. What I think that there is that we're, you know, for all of us that are doing this, who are committed to a spiritual practice and who are also committed to their family, it seems to me that having both is uncharted territory. Like we talked about in the beginning of this conversation, no one's really talking about it.
Right.
So I don't think that there's any clear path. I think that we're creating the path, and what that's going to take is a grappling. It's going to take a really going into it and discovering and going off, you know, off on left field and coming back and exploring that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I'm real personally committed to doing both.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And I'm discovering how to do that as I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely don't think, I could also get the guy who just says, well, screw my purpose. I'm just going to, as an excuse, I need to raise my family.
Right.
I could also understand that as well, but I think that there is a way to wed both of them.
Yeah, I think what I appreciate you talking about it in the polarity and the fact that because we don't have necessarily these role models or a manual, here's how to do it. Here's how to be a householder and to pursue your life's purpose, you know, and to develop yourself into your potential, whatever that may mean. But why does it have to be opposed? And what I'm hearing you say is that you've been served by having a family, that it's actually deepened your practice and your experience and your ability to show up more fully in the world. It gives you that feedback. And then it also on the other end, like it gives you, the family gives you feedback on when it's maybe a little too much, that it is coming to, at a cost for something so dear to you, which is your family.
Yes. Absolutely. And I hope to be open enough to be able to receive that feedback fully.
Mm.
And I think that kind of openness is, I think, is the key, is to be really, really honest with myself and be honest with my family and the people around me, and to be really open and generously listen to the feedback.
Mm.
And to trust it.
Yeah, I love
it. And to trust it.
The takeaway that I'm getting is if I'm a guy and I'm really feeling that I want to align my life with this inner sense of purpose, and I want to have my actions be an illustration of that, then there, and I also have a desire to possibly be a father and to be in relationship, be a bigger thinker. What is the larger kind of canvas that I can paint both of those in there? It shouldn't be an excuse to have one or the other. And the same is true for the guy that already has the family, and maybe he's had a family for 10, 15 years, and he's starting to wake up to something within himself. Maybe he read Way of the Superior Man or one of these other books, and he's like, holy shit, how am I going to incorporate this into the life that I have now? And again, it's about thinking bigger. How can we have both here? And there is a possibility there. It may not be on paper, but lean into it. Find out what that means for you. Get support.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great. And that just a couple of, I have a couple of practical things that have really made a big difference for me too. Could I share those as well?
Absolutely. Any practical stuff, any practices, let's dive in.
Well, you know, for, I think especially for men coming home after they're done working really hard, and I understand this, want to sit, kick back and drink beers and veg in front of the TV to kind of dissolve from the day. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I do that and will do that. But I do notice, I have started to do something and have been doing something that makes a bigger difference, I've noticed, is that when I come home and I park the car, rather than going in my house, I go right back to the area where I meditate. And I meditate for a half an hour or an hour. And then I get up and then I go and be with my family. And one of the things that I notice is that I am much more open, responsive, and attentive in a relaxed way and embracing of them. I'm really, really much more present with them. So it's I think in overall having a like continually taking, if I were to give any advice to fathers who want to do this work with their families or in the context of being a father, is one of the things you want to make sure and have in your house is you want to make sure and have your own space. If you can get your own room, get your own room. If you got to turn your garage into your space, if it's maybe just a corner of the house, but it's your territory, like no one else unless you say can go in that territory. And that you go there and you meditate and you go and do your spiritual practice there and you do the kinds of things that rejuvenate your spirit. And do daily rituals and daily practices where you remove yourself from the context of your relationship and being a father, and you go and you do your spiritual practice and let yourself be rejuiced. And then bring that back out to them. It's really, really important that we stay rested, that we nurture ourselves spiritually, do the things that feed our soul. Because if we don't, if we start to get tired, if we don't take care of ourselves, what'll inevitably happen is our wives, our kids, will start to look like obligations and burdens. And the truth of it is all when they start to look like obligations and burdens, that is not indicative of them being obligations and burdens. It's indicative of where I'm at. And so when that happens, that's a call to go, okay, maybe it's time to go in the garage and take a few deep breaths. Maybe it's, or whatever it is your spiritual practice is.
Right.
But realizing that has to come first. And sometimes it coming first is just 5 minutes here and there. But having that gauge about whether or not you're burdened or feeling obligated by your family is a good read often for me where I'm at emotionally and what I need.
I love that. You know, whenever family's starting to become a pain in the ass or anything's starting to become a pain in the ass, take time for myself. Check in with myself, do the rituals or do the things that I need to do that rejuvenate me, tap me into something larger, and then come from that place back to family or back to whatever it is that I'm applying myself towards.
One of the things that David Data talks about that I always found had a lot of truth for me and a lot of my friends is he says that oftentimes for men, their relationship and their family isn't their life purpose. Right? For some men, it is their life purpose. But for most men, it's not their life purpose. So it's really important to make that distinction, but also realize that with that distinction, that your family may not be the thing that gives you energy inherently. And just being straight about that with yourself means that what that means is that you need to make sure and get that energy and bring it into your family.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Otherwise, the end result is I'm around a dad that's just drained all the time.
Absolutely.
That's my experience of him. And then I get to, now I have this new, okay, dad equals drained and obligated and, you know, burdened.
Yes, totally. And the other thing that I, in my experience, it's made a big difference is being very, very real with my family about where I'm at. You know, being very real and sharing where I'm at my depths in a way that's responsible. But being transparent with my wife, being transparent with my kids about when I'm upset and taking responsibility for it, and being transparent to where I'm at in any given moment. That has been something that we've all been working on, my wife and I and all of our kids, is to continually be more and more vulnerable with each other and to create a space and a listening of one another that's safe enough so that we can be vulnerable.
And so let's actually illustrate that. What does that look like? I'm imagining kind of this 50s dad that is impenetrable. He's just the dad, and he comes home from work, and we don't really know who this guy is. And you're saying, are you saying show up more? And if you're sad, say you're sad. If you're frustrated, say you're frustrated. Find that responsible way to do that, which is out there. You can find these skills, but show up fully. Don't put on the happy face, the dad has it all together all the time face.
Yeah, totally. I'm just trying to think of a number of months back. Tessa was really going through a hard time, a real dark phase. And Tessa's the 17-year-old daughter. And she was going through this place where she wouldn't talk to us about what's going on with her, and we kept getting calls from the principal's office and stuff that she was acting out in these different ways. And then we'd ask her about what was happening, and she just would clam up. And one day I was sitting with her on the couch, and I think, you know, she got in trouble at school or something like that, and I was asking her what was happening, and she would just give me these short answers. And I felt myself just start to get frustrated and have a kind of a feeling of just being powerless or helpless. And I noticed that I started to contract around that and started getting a little controlling with her. And I just paused and I just took a deep breath and I looked at her. And I actually felt what I was actually feeling. And I looked at her and I could feel that she was hurting. And I could feel that I was hurting because she was hurting, and I felt powerless because she wouldn't open up. And so I just went up to her and I put my hand on her heart and I just started to cry with her. And I just opened up, and it was just totally transparent of what it was like to be with her in that place. I didn't minimize it, I didn't exaggerate it, and I was just responsible about it. And I started tearing up and crying, and then I noticed that she started to cry. And when she saw that vulnerability in me, I noticed that she softened. And although she didn't talk with me in that moment, I could just tell it in what happened to her, in her body, and I noticed her shoulders relax and her eyes softened. But then a couple minutes later with her mom, she started to open up and reveal what was going on with her. And then later we had a conversation.
It's not just
literally talking about where I'm at, but it's literally being transparent about that.
And it reminds me of what you were talking about earlier, of like those surface things. I could get caught up in my frustration and my pissed offness. Like, well, fine, if you're not going to, you know, if you're just going to clam up, then go to your room or whatever, you know, it could have ultimately devolved to, but you actually went down deeper, actually checked in with what was going on. And there was that hurt. That was just what was present there, and connected with that instead of letting the surface tension stuff hijack the situation.
Yes.
Oh, great.
Totally. And it's just, that's the thing about it is that, you know, I think we want to remember, you know, bottom line of it is mother, father, sister, brother, all of those things are roles that exist in language, right? There are these roles, and a lot of times those roles have their own historical baggage that come along with them. And But in reality, they are just roles, and I think it's really important that we be fully ourselves in those roles. And I know that one of the things that was really missing, and I think for a lot of us was a big missing with our parents, is that, you know, that they never stepped really outside of their roles, and we never really got to feel them. And I got to say that, you know, my dad, now I come from, both my parents were drug addicts and alcoholics and violent and crazy and all of that kind of stuff, right? And everything that could go with that went with that as
all
a
right.
kid.
All right.
And I got to say that my dad used to say great stuff to me. He used to get drunk and get stoned, and he'd sit down with me, and he'd start professing to me this great wisdom on how to be in the world. And he used to say great things to me all the time. That, and I know in his world he was being my parent. But it's interesting. I can't remember very much that he ever actually said. But the thing that made a difference to me was how he was being. It wasn't what he said. It's not what my mom said. It's not even what they were intentionally trying to do, but it's who they were being that was the real parenting. Who they were being with me was the thing that impacted my soul in a way that made the big difference in who I became.
Yeah, and the being part is being themselves, not being the role of the mother or the father, the list of responsibilities, not letting that get in the way of them showing up as who they are.
Yes.
Warts and all.
Being real, being genuine, being human.
Right. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's excellent. Well, anything else that you want to say as we wrap up here, Guy?
That was great talking about this. I don't think I've ever had an explicit conversation like this of bringing these two worlds together. It's been a rich conversation. Thank you, Trip.
Take a moment to visit triplanier.com and let us know what you'd like to hear on The New Man. Thanks for listening.